Public hearing on 2073. Jeff, want to talk a little bit about 2073?
Good morning, Chair. House Bill 2073 would rename the Interagency Coordinating Council on Hunger, and then the new name would be the Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness, and it would expand the membership from 8 to 15 members. It would also expand and modify the membership of the Hunger Relief Task Force.
Okay. And we have Rick Crager from the Oregon Housing and Community Services. Do you have anybody else who should be coming up to testify with you, Rick? Okay, great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Rick Crager. I'm the Deputy Director for Oregon Housing Community Services, as well as the Chairman for the Ending Homelessness Advisory Council. Appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity this morning to come and testify on behalf of House Bill 2073. The Department developed House Bill 2073 for the purpose of consolidating the work of various councils under one state structure. By moving to this consolidated structure, the department will create efficiency, collaboration, and communication among state agencies and other public and private entities involved in anti-poverty programs.
Rick, could I encourage you to either move the microphone away from you or you move away from it?
Okay. Is that better?
And I just remind everybody again, if you have any electronics that are on, please turn them off, not just on mute, but completely off. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is that better right there? Okay. This bill will advance our common goals and objectives in the fight against the problems of hunger and homelessness in Oregon. There is currently in law an established Interagency Coordinating Council on Hunger. This council is composed of 9 members representing 7 state agencies. The ICCH receives recommendations and special initiatives from the Hunger Relief Task Force, which is currently a 24-member task force composed of state agencies, legislators, local service providers, and other special interest groups. The recommendations and special initiatives developed by the task force are designed to effectively increase the participation of qualified Oregonians in food and nutrition programs. The ICCH receives the recommendations from the task force and determines how they can best be implemented within their respective state agencies. And, Madam Chair, I might just share with you some of the statistics. I think some of you are familiar with them. Several years ago, in terms of the issue of hunger, we were ranked number 1 in the nation, and that was at 5.2% of the population. Since that time, it has been reduced to 3.8%. Now, not all of this has contributed to the Interagency Coordinating Council on Hunger. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes that we have been able to make and been very successful, but I will, again, a lot of the work that's been done with this council as well, the Hunger Relief Task Force, has contributed greatly to the success. In terms of addressing the issues of homelessness, the governor signed the executive order in April 2006 that established the Ending Homelessness Advisory Council. This council was designed to review policies and make recommendations for better coordinated efforts and programs among government and private sector organizations and individuals that serve homeless people. And, Madam Chair, since that time, we've begun convening in October, and we begin the work of developing a 10-year plan to end homelessness. It's been very effective to this point. We've been able to put a lot of good information together, and we'll be actually planning on releasing that towards the end of 2007. House Bill 2073 changes the current Interagency Coordinating Council on Hunger to the Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness. It expands the council to include an additional 6 state agencies. The total membership will increase to 15, which will represent a total of 13 state agencies. This council received recommendation from both the Hunger Relief Task Force and the Ending Homelessness Advisory Council. By expanding the council's focus to both hunger and homelessness, it will benefit the people of Oregon by allowing a more unified front to represent Oregon on matters of policy, funding, and discussions related to food, nutrition, and homelessness, creating new opportunities to share resources, information, and collaboration among state agencies and between public and private organizations involved in the ending of hunger and homelessness, and finally expanding the ability to make recommendations to policymakers for better coordination of programs for hungry and homeless persons. In addition to expanding the existing ICCH and broadening the focus to address both hunger and homelessness, there are a few other minor changes within House Bill 2073. First, the definition of hunger is modified to reflect the definition language used for all federal programs. Secondly, the membership of the Hunger Relief Task Force is expanded and the functionality and structure of the task force is clarified. And the role and functions of the Oregon Housing Community Services for both the councils is also clarified. I provided with you an attachment in my testimony of the structure that is put in place, that this will what the structure will be looking like after the passage of House Bill 2073. You can see that there is one other council, the Oregon Food Policy, which is part of House Bill 2288. It is also a companion bill along with this that would bring the structure to completeness. I should mention there are no additional expenditures associated with this bill. House Bill 2073 will help the department to do a better job in the quest to reduce hunger, increase food security, and to end homelessness in Oregon. We urge the committee to support House Bill 2073, and I'm open to any questions you might have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Gentleman?
I do.
Yes,
Madam Chair. Rick, I'm just curious. So will you be... Are you deeply involved right now this time of the year since it's the governor's food drive in February?
Is the agency involved?
Yes.
Most all agencies do participate in the governor's food drive, so yes, we are.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I think we have Patty Whitney Wise.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Patty Whitney Wise, the Executive Director for the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force. I'm happy to be here this morning. I felt since there were changes to our task force in this bill, and we've been part of the discussion to expand to homelessness, it was important for me to come and make sure that you knew that I was also very supportive of this effort. We've been involved with ICCH, obviously, since its inception, and we've seen some really great partnerships developed between state agencies. Each of them has done good work in hunger, but oftentimes they don't realize where the cross ideas can help both at the same time, and the sum of the total is much greater than each individual part, and that's really been true here. I also passed out our executive summary that shows the progress we've made. We've made progress on 20 out of the 40 items in the Act to End Hunger in the first 2 years. That's a 5-year strategic plan, so we're very positive about the movement forward, and we feel that we can help do for homelessness what has been done for hunger in this state and really help eliminate the two problems together. So thank you.
Thank you, Patty. Any questions, Ms. Wise? All right. Thank you so much. Does anyone else wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2073 and open up the public hearing on House Bill 2175. Andy?
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2175 would authorize the Department of Human Services to use abuse and neglect reports to determine fitness of employees and volunteers, to provide a variety of mental health, developmental disabilities, senior services, and local health services.
Great. Thank you. And we have several people who would like to testify on this. I'm going to ask all three of them to come up here. Clyde Sakai, Eva Coons, is it? Thank you. And Gayen Karam?
Georgina.
Thank you. Welcome. Clyde, do you want to start first?
I shall. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Clyde Sakai. I'm the Deputy Director for Operations for the Department of Human Services. With me at the table are Eva Kutas, who is the administrator for the Office of Investigations and Training, and Georgina Carroll, who is our Deputy Administrator for our Office of Human Resources. And we're here today before the committee to testify on House Bill 2175, which would give the department the authority to use abuse and neglect reports to determine the fitness of employees and volunteers to provide care for our clients. The safety of our clients is a responsibility we take very seriously and is one of our highest priorities. This bill is an important foundational step in helping us to develop a system that will assist us in ensuring the safety of the people we provide services to. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Kutas for her testimony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Eva Kutas, and I am the director for the Office of Investigation and Training of the Department of Human Services. Our office oversees the statewide protective services program for adults with either mental illness or developmental disabilities. I am here today representing the entire department and its child and adult vulnerable adult protective services programs. Today we're here to seek statutory authority to be able to use and share the information about abuse that is held by the department and all of its protective services programs. There are three purposes for which we would like to be able to use this information. First one is to provide protective services. Last month I was involved for more than 6 months working to remove a young severely disabled woman from a severely neglectful and, as it turned out, also sexually abusive home. One of the obstacles that we faced there was that although her niece and nephew had been removed for sexual abuse by Child Protective Services, we didn't have the authority to get the detailed Child Protective Services report that would have allowed us to go to court to get a protective order to remove her. And so as a result of that, we had to build an entirely separate case, basically, to be able to take to a judge and to be able to get her out of that home. Second purpose for which we'd like to use this information is to make licensing and certification decisions so that if someone is a foster care provider in one system and is perhaps sanctioned or even loses their license for abuse, that we're able then to use that information in the rest of the system if they apply, for example, to be another kind of foster care provider or a direct care staff in one of our programs. The third purpose for which we'd like to use the information is basically to ensure the integrity of department staff, so that if an individual who works for us is providing services to a vulnerable population, children or adults, that we are then able to use information when they perhaps themselves might be substantiated for some kind of abuse, financial abuse against a relative, physical abuse, even perhaps having their own children removed, and yet continuing to work with us. At the present time, the Attorney General's office has advised us that without this authority, we're not able to use that information legally. We have, for the last 2 years, had a department work group of all of the protective services programs focusing on initially coordination, of the work that we do. As a result of that, we've identified a number of things that we need to do, and this being foremost among them, to be able to start to use our information better. There are undoubtedly, and I'm sure this will come up in your mind as well, a number of challenges, very difficult issues that we'll have to deal with. Not the least among them are the fact that we have different definitions of abuse for every part of our system and statute. We don't have a common database that collects this information. We have separate ones. And we don't have a definite level of due process that's used, so that in order to use some information substantiating a person would want to make sure they had some kind of due process and were able to challenge the findings of that report. We believe that our next step will be to work with our community partners and develop an implementation plan for furthering use of this information out in the community. And Georgina Caro is going to go over with you the amended bill, which spells out the plan that we have. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and I'm happy to answer questions now or after Georgina reviews the amended bill.
Thank you, Ms. Kutas. Shall we wait for questions unless somebody's got something important there? Okay. Thank you.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Georgina Carroll. I'm the Assistant Administrator of the Office of Human Resources for the Department. And I'm happy to be here with Mr. Psyche and Ms. Kutas to support House Bill 2175. And we do have a set of amendments that I've hand engrossed for you, and hopefully you have a copy of those, and I'll go over those in a moment. I have been a member of the abuse review group that Eva spoke to for the last 2 years. I actually was asked to join the group because of my experience in managing the criminal records unit to the department. The department has used criminal histories to do background screenings for a number of years. In 1997, there was actual statutory authority given to the department to use it in a broad-based way. So I managed the unit that used that background process. For some of our providers, we were also able to use Child Protective Services history in order to screen for those the suitability of those providers. The frustrating thing for me was the gap in being able to use that information that belonged to the department as a result of our own investigations in a more effective way across the spectrum of our services. So we were only able to use Child Protective Services information, and we're only able to use that for a certain set of providers, when in fact we knew there was information that was gathered by the department that would have been helpful in a screening process that we were not able to use. And the reason we were not able to use that, it has been determined with our partnership with the Department of Justice that we did not have statutory authority to use this information beyond its intended purpose. And so that's the genesis of House Bill 2175 and why we're here today. Unfortunately, our work group was not able to get in final draft what we had hoped to bring to you before our deadline. So the bill that you see introduced, 2175, is really not what the department would like to put forward. It does not have in it what we feel are the important elements to go forward. So we have drafted amendments for you. They are in Legislative Council. Unfortunately, they were not able to get completed in time for today's hearing, so we did a hand and gross version for you. And if I might, I'll just go through what the amendments do. In essence,
could I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
So are you saying the amendments that you gave us takes the place of this?
Exactly.
So we're not, the bill that we got from Elsie is not the one that you want. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct. Okay. Basically, the amendments we engrossed for you replace and become a new House Bill 2175.
Great. Thank you.
Basically, the amendments do for the department what we need to get started with the process of using this information for background screening. It will give us the authority to use the information, and our intent is to start with using this information for screening of our own employees and volunteers. And we will do that within our current resources, and we will do that as part of the background screening process we do now, using criminal history information. Then secondly, what the amendments do is allow us to work in the interim on an implementation plan with our stakeholders, providers, partners. As we were working within the department, we knew the complexity of this issue, and we also know that this is a new process and it would impact the providers of service, and we did not want to go forward with legislation that would lock us into something that we hadn't had an opportunity to work thoroughly with our partners on. In the history of the department, when we developed the criminal background checking process, we did that over the course of about 4 years with a broad-based group of our providers and stakeholders, and we would envision working on an implementation strategy for this purpose as well. So in essence, that's what the amendments do. We would then come back with a report to the next legislative session in terms of how we plan to implement it, what type of rules, what the resources would be needed, and then what the impact would be. So in essence, that's what we have before you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So this is the first step in a series of steps. Correct.
Madam Chair, that's the intent, to give us the authority, which the Department of Justice says we need, first of all, and then to get us in a position to do the planning for implementation.
Great. And I know, committee, that you've just now seen this, so I'm expecting that you will have eventually a lot of questions, but do you have any questions now?
I do, Madam Chair.
Representative Olson.
I'm curious. Why are you waiting for 2 years to want to develop the plan and come back to us and implement it then, or at least provide it to us?
Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, Our plan is kind of a twofold plan. Number one, we are going to implement for our employees and volunteers immediately. The second step of the plan, and we are going to have to sit down with our providers, stakeholders, and other groups that provide services to clients, because we do think this is going to have an impact on their service provision. And the other issue that's going to have, where we'll have an impact, is a resource issue on what is it going to take additional resources for them to be able to implement this. Our thinking was that in taking the time to develop the plan, we would then be able to come back to the next session with a policy option package to ask for the resources to implement. Now, if there's a method by which we could do that quicker, we would certainly, this is not something we want to sit around on. This is something we want to move as quickly as possible. And I know you have a deep interest in this area. And, you know, as I said earlier, we really, the safety of our clients is a number one priority for us. So we'll be moving on this as quickly as we can. The issue would be, once we get to the end product, the resources that we think we would need to implement it and how we would go about arranging for those.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I like where you're driving, where you're wanting to go, and everything with it. It's probably way past due for that, and
absolutely
timeliness. And I agree with where you're wanting to go with it. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be done.
Yes,
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes,
I just have a question, Madam Chair, about 2175 for. Freshmen, legislators, and slow learners, of which I'm both categories. Where does 2175 emanate from originally?
I'll let Mr. Sakai answer that.
Chair Tomei and Representative Gilliam, when we sat down with the abuse group, when the abuse review group sat down with the Department of Justice and said, you don't have the authority to use that information in that way, the department then drafted a concept and a bill to give us that authority, because we think it's important that we share that information across the department.
So it's the department originally, and as it's evolved, now we've got the amendments. But it's all department driven.
Any other questions? Representative Cowan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just kind of struggling to understand fully the difference between the two classifications. It would go into effect immediately for employees, for folks you license, for volunteers, and then you want to have time to confer more with providers, and could you just help us understand the difference between those two categories?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan. Yes. What we want to do as a first step is implement for our employees and volunteers, and for those providers we already have authority, either from state statute or federal statute. So we want to continue to do that. And right now we use Child Protective Services information for screening child care providers and other providers of children's services. So that would be the first wave. Then the next wave would be the rest of the providers in the department. So provision of service for people with disabilities, seniors, and transportation, all of the services we have across the spectrum.
Follow up? Okay, so basically we're separating providers of services to children and providers of services to disabled adults. Okay.
And Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Okay. Sorry, had to get that in my brain.
We just didn't want to take any steps backward, because we already use it for some provision of service, and we wanted to be able to continue to do that.
Any further questions? So as I understand it, the previous bill, not the one that you, the new bill, the amended bill, there were no, the stakeholders, there were no questions about that. Have you discussed with the stakeholders if they have any concerns about the new bill?
Madam Chair, I don't believe at that point the discussion, the, that at this point, that discussion has taken place. Georgina, I would look to you since you directed.
Madam Chair, we've had a preliminary discussion with several of the provider organizations, but we haven't had an opportunity to sit down and really look at what we've presented to them is the two-step process, wanting to get the authority and then having them be a part of the plan. So far, that's all.
Madam Chair, if I might add, the discussions we've had with the providers have been very positive. I mean, their priority is the safety of clients also. Their concern is the impact this is going to have on their budgets and the resources they have. And the discussions we've had, they appreciate the fact that we're approaching it in this way where we get the authority first, but we then sit down with them and plan the implementation to minimize the impact on their budgets.
Okay. So there will be a fiscal impact, but we won't be dealing with that until the next legislative session, correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. We look forward to seeing you again. Anyone else who wishes to speak on House Bill 2175? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2175 and open up a work session on House Bill 2022. Yes.
Oh. I'll introduce it shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2122 is a measure that would require health care employers to address the issue of nurse...
May I correct you? It's 2022.
2022. Would require health care employers, which are defined as ambulatory surgical centers and hospitals, to address the issue of workplace violence against nurses. It would require that... in a variety of prevention, mitigation, and assessment programs be implemented. It would also require that incident reports be maintained by these entities and that the entities would submit their records to the Department of Consumer and Business Services by January of 2009. It would also require that additional staff support be provided to nurses and that there are detailed self-defense right for nurses detailed in the bill.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2022 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Olson moves that we move House Bill 2022 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you. Any discussion? Representative Maurer.
Madam Chair, I just, this for the record, I know that there's, you know, we have an interest in moving this bill forward, and there's still some work that needs to be done. But, just put this into context that this is another requirement on these organizations for the benefit of the patient, and that this is a small step in that endeavor, protecting patients, but in the grand scheme of things, we come at this in 1,000 different directions, and ultimately this costs money. And we gnash teeth on a daily basis about the cost of health care. And so we just have to put in a context that this raises the bar, therefore increasing the cost of health care to the people that we're trying to serve. And I know what we're trying to do, and I am supportive of it. And so I just want to ensure that we realize that there's a consequence to these kind of actions.
Thank you, Representative Maurer.
Yes, ma'am.
Any further discussion? Okay, Representative Olson moved House Bill 2022 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any objection? Any further discussion? If not, the assistant will call the roll.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Excuse?
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Chair Clemente?
Aye. The motion carries, and House Bill 2022 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Olson, would you be willing to carry this bill on the floor?
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. I close the work session on House Bill 2022. Do I need to do anything further on this? Okay. All right. Any further business in the committee? All right. Thank you. We will close the committee on human service, House Human Services and Women's Wellness. And thank